What used to be considered an easy answer in the scientific community has become quite complicated in modern day society. Well, at least to those who exist in a politically correct woke environment. A new documentary dares to ask the question, what is a woman?
What is a woman? A woman is not anything in particular.
There is not one particular thing.
It could be many things to many people.
Some women have penises, right? Some men have vaginas.
However, while the debate over the present day place and role of the transgender community is not new, the concept is not. But what is the catalyst for this recent aggressive call for acceptance in every aspect of American life? And how is the issue being handled in other countries who have dealt or currently dealing with the same push for acknowledgement? I'm Skynell Hughes, and on today's 360 View, we are going to look at the call for accepting a transgender identity in almost every aspect of daily life. And is it causing the sexualization of children at an inappropriately young age? In 2021, the Olympics, we saw the first transgender competitors. And now, starting in the 2022 Games, the International Olympic Committee has changed their standard for trans athletes to compete in games. Now, the six-page document states athletes should be allowed to compete in the category that best aligns with their gender identity. Now, athletes will no longer be presumed to have an advantage for competing in a sport that does not align with their gender and will never need to undergo any kind of medical procedure all to be eligible. We've also seen the rise of American swimmer Leah Thomas. Born as a male, Thomas competed up until sophomore year in college on the male team. Now then, after a year off for COVID, came back all to swim for the women's team, launching a career and dominating the competition. Now, going from ranking in 400th place to NCAA national champion, after all this, an outcry from Title X supporters and women athletes. The International Swimming Federation has ruled to no longer allow transgender participants who didn't begin their hormonal suppressants and transition before the age of 12. We are now joined by Carly Webb, who is a transgender athlete. Welcome, Carly. Thank you for joining us. And of course, we're going to take on the most controversial issue at first. So first of all, tell us a little bit about yourself and what sport you play, and what have you been able to do to be able to participate in that sport?
Well, for starters, I've been a working journalist for 28 years. I've worked at the local level. I've worked at network levels. I've worked in both print and broadcast. So I've kind of gotten around a little bit. As far as sports goes, the name of sport, I'm going to play it right now. Marathons and triathlons have been kind of like my obsession. So those have been the things I've been mainly working towards. Although I'm looking to hit the football fields again this fall. I mean, after all, I am a Midwestern girl, so, you know, football is part of the DNA. It's like oxygen, and maybe even a little bit more important.
I understand that, but as a South, we can contemplate on actually who's going to be better at the sport. That being said, let's put on your reporter hat first. How does this ruling from FINA actually impact the Olympic standards for participants?
Well, what it basically told Leah Thomas is, kid, enjoy law school, because you're not setting foot in an elite competition in swimming anytime soon, if ever. But let's talk about what this is really about. Why is this rule in place? And why does this rule directly contradict the new IOC framework for fairness that went in effect in March? And mainly, this was due to hysteria and fear signifying absolutely nothing. This was done as a response directly to one person, namely Leah Thomas. This was done under the quote-unquote threat of Leah Thomas, not the reality of the fact that Leah's just going to be one in the scrum if she does show up at the Olympic trials in 2024. It was the mere threat. And also the simple fact that FINA and the UCI, the cycling world governing body, who also put up new rules two weeks ago, they don't want to deal with the smoke of what happened at the NCAA Swimming Championships in Atlanta, where you had two groups of protesters. One came from 4,000 miles away across the Atlantic strictly to do one thing, harass and hound one person. That's what these governing bodies are really afraid about. That's why these rules exist.
Okay, so you say it's about the protesters. I want to actually focus on the person, because Leah Thomas, you have to admit, she came out in Sports Illustrated interview and said she only competed for fun and it had nothing to do with winning. But you look at her past history, competing as her biologically born male didn't do so well.
Okay, stop. Stop right there. First, the word you're looking for is cisgender. Not biological. Cisgender.
Well, she was born but that's biological. She was born a male, and the competing that goes into it. I mean, you have to look at that and go, the record.
All I'm saying is cisgender and transgender. It's scientifically more sound. It's scientifically accurate. It's medically accurate. And you know what else? It doesn't make you look like a transphobe. That's all.
Well,
it's respect.
But I want
it's human. Humanize trans people, please. Let's try doing that.
Let's talk about the competition, though, from 400th to the first place. I get that they're trying to avoid that happening,
Scotty,
but at the same time,
Scotty, I know.
Do you respect that?
Scotty, I know you worked for Trump, but let's get a little truth.
Actually, I never worked for Trump. I never was paid a dime for Trump. I never worked for him.
Well, but you support
him. I'm a journalist just like you. I've always worked for journalism companies.
Okay, I know you're into alternative facts, but here's the real facts on Leah Thomas. First off, that 462nd ranking thing, that's sound and hysteria signifying nothing. Let's take a look at her sophomore year at Penn, when she was also number two in the Ivy League in three events at Ivy League championships.
So you're saying this has all been twisted. You're saying this has all been twisted to demonize Leah Thomas.
Oh, absolutely. It's been twisted. Leah Thomas has been demonized this entire past season. Let's be real about that. This one kid has been demonized in so many circles. Now, let's bring the truth and
So then let me ask you this question. Here's the question. How about her teammates, though? Because her teammates were put pressure on to sign this letter saying they agree with her competing. Now that they've graduated, no longer under their coaches, they've come out and said, guess what? We were pressured into agreeing to her. We never did. If this was such a legitimate situation, why are coaches having to put pressure on so that they don't face the backlash of public relations that seems to be happening?
Now, here's your number one. Where was that reported? One.
There's letters. Two, they've all come out and signed a letter saying it. Sports Illustrated came out and said and published the letter of all of her teammates saying we were pressured to accept her as a competitor on our side. We didn't agree with it.
And they asked about, they said, oh, we did that, but we can't give our name to it. See, here's another
because of the mass hysteria that would attack them.
Mass hysteria? Let's talk. No, the real mass hysteria was placed on the person who can't hide. If it was really that much of a matter, you know, I'm like, I believed in the Herman Edwards rule, which means if it's really important, put your name on it. Don't throw a rock behind a tree. You had a few kids who said I was silenced, but they weren't silenced going to Fox News and OutKick. Now, weren't they?
Two media outlets out of 1,000 that demonized them.
If it was that important, put your name on it. If it was that important, put your name on it. And
I think that speaks to the mob mentality that these women felt like they were going to be pressured. But that's my question to you.
The mob mentality was two sets of protesters who had no other connection to an event flying all the way down to Atlanta.
But they were protesting those women. They would protest these women coming out, as you said, looking transphobe.
They were protesting one kid and harassing
and that kid ended up winning first place.
Who did everything by the rules and regulations. In fact, three different
but had not actually gone through
the
sex change. But let me ask you this question. Here's my thing. If Leah really wants to be a female, she's not gone through the full transition. She has not done the surgeries required to be a woman.
Well, first off, surgeries are not required according to
normally it's God and how you're born. But in this case, if we're going to try to play with science, she's not done what was needed.
Scotty, and you know that how. Are you her doctor or her endocrinologist?
Well, she still had the male parts, the male body parts she was born with.
You know that how. Are you her doctor or endocrinologist? You cisgender people really have to cut it out with this fixation about people's genitals. It's kind of creepy.
Well,
it really is.
It's because how we identify each other. Okay, so let's move on this, because before we start calling names,
no one looks at anybody's pants Scotty. No one does, really. Do you actually do a pants check on somebody when you're out in public?
But really? I'm not. What about in the locker room? When a male is walking around with male genitalia around other women and they are wanting to be modest. In the Penn State locker room, and these women felt awkward about it, but they weren't allowed to tell their coaches. The women that were on her swim team, her co-swimmers. What about their rights? No. Are they not allowed to have rights?
First off,
for one woman, everybody else is being put out of the way.
Who is saying that?
The teammates that signed this letter with Sports Illustrated that saying they could not complain.
The teammates who are signing this letter that they can't put their name on, but Leah Thomas has nowhere to hide. Really?
Okay. We're obviously, let's go to this Gallup poll.
If it was that important, you put your name on it. And in fact,
because nobody wants to be labeled transphobe when they're going into the career world that we are looking for jobs. They do not want to be labeled that because they know how bad it can be, the heat that's on them. When they're not really transphobe, they're just don't want a man competing against them. Okay.
No, what you're really saying is you don't want people accountable. I don't know about you, but I want accountability for my workplace.
Well, I love accountability for what they're born with, and that's why we're having this question. But, you know, a Gallup poll found 2/3 of adults actually think transgender athletes should play for teams matching the gender on their birth certificate. That's Gallup, not a conservative organization. Do you believe that this is a fair ruling to uphold the scientific differences between men and women, or do you also agree on this idea of creating a third level of competition for this category?
Well, I'll put it two ways. Number one, the FINA rule, once again, was a response to hysteria and fear that has no medical basis, no scientific basis, or competitive basis. So that's my feeling on that one. As far as a third category, really, with the rules that were in place before fear and hysteria changed them, it would be useless to have them. They were not necessary. We already had solid rules in place and solid regulation in place, but because a group of transphobes went to a swim meet and said boo, we have these rules now. Now we have this knee-jerk response to fear. Now, as far as the Gallup poll. I have a lot of questions in terms of methodology of these polls, because I've read these polls up, down, right, left, and center the last 2 years. And oftentimes you point a question in a certain type of way where you lead people in that direction. Ultimately, I look at results of sporting events, and I look at largely what competitors who don't hide their names are saying. And most of those competitors, including some people that Leah was in a pitched battle with in the 500 free, at the NCAA championships, who all said, hey, Leah competed by the rules. We're ready to swim against her. Let's do this thing. And they did. And Leah won a national championship and is a 3-time All-American. And again, did not only by the rules that were put in place, but by rules that changed 3 times during the season. Now, you want to talk about fairness, Scotty. Where was Leah Thomas's fairness in all this? Where was the fairness in this kid? Now, remind you, a college kid, granted a college senior, who took 6 months of vitriol, getting smacked around every day by a number of media outlets, who took teammates saying, I was silenced, and then, but they were opening their mouths to everybody with a microphone as long as they kept their names out of it, and then has to go to a national championship and has to walk into an auditorium with protesters all over the place, and with protesters even bringing their vitriol into the venue. Where's her fairness in that? If it was your daughter, would you want that for her?
Well, I would know if my daughter's competing.
People coming down there like that?
But listen here, Carl, let me say this. In the end, we might disagree on this topic and the perspective of it, but let me say I respect you, and I respect you for coming on and sharing it. And once again, I always trust the viewers to make up their own mind, and I appreciate you sharing your perspective. Thank you for joining us, Carly Webb.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. We should do this again sometime.
Anytime. I want you to stay right there. I'm Skynell Hughes, and we're going to be back with more 360 View all after the break.
思い出せるな。あんな悲惨なな、悪魔の法則のようなことをもう忘れようと思って一生になってる。
Unit 731 was a unique organization in the history of the world. What they were trying to do was to simply do nothing short than build the most powerful and most deadly biological weapons program that the world had ever known.
それを各班にな作らして、それで最前線をしょったわけよ。取れたでな、その一回金を作るのに3人ぐらい殺しよったんや。
一般の丸太、木の丸太ですね、人間とも思わなかったんではないかと思いますよ。
赤ちゃんの入った女の人を解剖してな、赤ちゃんを標本に入れるんや。お母さんも殺してな。
14歳の子供ですからね、まだやっぱり病気にかかった人、怪我をした人、こういった人の治療をやったりすると思ってたんです。ところがしまいにはね、細菌戦の専門技術になるというようなことが出てきましたけれども、
welcome back to 360 View. I'm your host, Scotty Nell Hughes. The influence of the transgender community transcends beyond the sports world. We are now seeing a doubling of people who identify as part of the LGBTQ plus community in each generation. And this is leading to schools, politics, and entertainment to integrate these conversations into not only everyday life, but also younger and younger ages. To discuss if this is leading to the over-sexualization of children, we want to bring in visiting fellow at the Loughborough University, Joanna Harper. Joanna, thank you so much for joining me on this.
You're welcome.
There is this big debate going on right now in children under 18, and it's about puberty blockers and undergoing irreversible gender-changing surgeries. And some are even going as far to call it as child abuse. As someone who's actually transitioned, do you think it's appropriate for children to start transitioning as young as 2 years old? And is it their own mindset, or is it more the influence possibly of their parents?
When you say transitioning, no one undergoes any medical procedures at age 2 or even at age 7 or at age 8. And if they change their mind, it's not a big deal.
So when is the encouragement right now? Why are we seeing this talk? Where is this conversation coming from that there are sort of puberty blockers being offered to children at a very young age? And what age is that are you seeing?
Well, there's no point in blocking puberty till it starts. And that's usually 10 to 12 years old.
And so that idea and having that conversation about puberty blockers, do you believe a 10-year-old is knows enough at that point on their own to make that decision? Or are we still seeing the influence of not only society, but their parents?
Well, the reason that puberty blockers are initiated is because they are entirely reversible. And so it gives children a chance to mature and get older and make informed decisions later in life.
Okay, so that being said, you're right. But that's puberty blockers. We know surgeries for children to transition are not reversible. So what are some of these irreversible effects and side effects of puberty blockers that parents should be aware of before they give them to children? What consideration conversations need to be happening in these households?
So, again, puberty blockers are reversible. Surgery does not happen before 18, and so there's no irreversible surgery in minor children. These decisions are not made lightly, but they should be made the child, the parent, and the physician.
So what sort of, are there conversations about mental health going on? I mean, I have teenagers and they are confused about everything from what outfit to wear to what friends they're hanging out with. Confusion just lives in being a teenager. What about the mental health, though, especially considering we are in a post-coronavirus society, that we're finding these children are going, these actual teenagers or children are going into? Is there concern possibly for the mental health ramifications if this conversation is not being handled properly?
Well, the most important mental health consideration is that transgender people face huge rates of depression, suicide attempts. And if they are allowed to access puberty blockers, hormones, surgery later in life, this is shown to reduce depression, reduce suicidal ideation. So, yeah, there are important mental health considerations, and transition generally improves the mental health of transgender people.
Okay. So I understand that. And this is obviously a conversation that's been relatively new. Also, social media's involvement in this. And I don't know if you're familiar, in fact, I'm probably pretty sure you are, of there's an account on TikTok called The Libs of TikTok. It's on international fame because of Twitter. She was doxxed. The creator takes videos that were posted by far left showing how they are influencing and basically grooming children in schools and bringing them to light, leading some teachers to be even fired by their school districts. You are seeing an uptick of, quote, family-friendly drag shows for children. And Libs of TikTok have exposed publicly those funded libraries and schools hosting field trips to nightclubs and bringing in drag queens to perform for students. Do you believe that this is appropriate adult entertainment for our students and for a curriculum for kids at a young age?
That's not my area of expertise. And I would recommend that people spend less time on social media.
Oh, well, that's always a good one, especially if we're talking about mental health. That's always helpful. But, you know, I mean, this all incorporates in this conversation that is happening not only on social media, but also in the streets. America, June is Pride Month. Many parades are hosted in cities across America. There was a Washington Post article. It was getting ripped for saying kink and nudity that go hand in hand with these celebrations should be seen by children. And I get it. It's not your expertise, but it's also just as a human. Do you believe that we are introducing sexuality and sexual acts to children across the board so young? And is this a positive thing for society to be doing?
Well, being transgender isn't about sex. So by talking about transgender issues, we are not introducing sex. But yeah, I agree that we shouldn't be introducing high sexualized content to young kids.
Okay, so then how do you not introduce the concept of sex when you have a transgender library reading time and kids at a young age? How do they go, why is this person different from this person? And that conversation happened. How is that not introducing sex to children at a young age who might not understand the full picture of what all is involved?
It's talking about gender and not sex. So it isn't introducing sex. We are just talking about people who are uncomfortable living as they were assigned at birth and are more comfortable living in a different way.
Okay, so then let's bring it to another part of this, because there is a difference, I do agree, believe, in the transgender situation as well as the LGBT situation. And there's obviously conversations that happen between the two groups. They are not hand in hand. Many actually disagree with one another and the approach that it's doing. But now we're seeing this rise of teachers who are coming out to students and the addition of a wide range use of pronouns, along with teachers encouraging hiding a student's gender identity from their parents. How is this a healthy thing for society? And do you not almost see people, you know, choosing pronouns based off their personality, not their gender? Do you think this is causing teachers, straight or trans, to look for validation from their students and explain themselves to students? They're being forced because of this, and we're seeing this on social media.
You know, I'm an expert in physiology and transgender athletes, and you haven't asked me a single question about that. And so... I'm afraid I'm going to have to leave, but have a good day. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us. You know, I think that's a part of the conversation. So many times when you do ask these questions about it, they run from it. And I think that is why we're seeing such a confusion on the issue today. That doesn't help the situation. But I definitely respect our guests for actually coming on and having the conversation with us. Now, before our guest was terminated the conversation, I wanted to point out that women's rights prior to being established, men often had to play the role of a woman in the arts and athletics. However, that was just about playing the role, not establishing this permanent new identity, nor taking it to this next level and competing against their prior gender. These recent changes, which are being discussed, are not a positive step forward for society. We're not talking about equality for race, gender, or even sexual discrimination. Rather, the modern-day push in society for transgender acceptance in many aspects, which has been counterproductive for the historical accomplishment for minority rights. Transgender rights are more about blurring these lines of identity and sowing confusion and doubt in what is the natural-born standard. Because those lines are not respected, it should be of no surprise. The lines of what is appropriate for our children is often disregarded by transgender advocates, and the conversations are not allowed to be had. This hurts their cause, as those on the outside are repulsed by the concept of introducing anything sexual to the most innocent, as it so often leads to exploitation. It is impossible to establish a non-discrimination policy regarding transgender individuals without discriminating against another, putting others at a disadvantage or possible endangerment. Nowhere in this various fight for equality in history have we seen this scenario presented, and yet those who care to point this out are deemed hateful. Until science develops, there is no other aspect of human life which is absent of influence than the gender we are assigned at birth. If we allow this to be blurred, then everything else is negotiable, and nothing in society will be sacred. I'm Sky Nell Hughes, and this has been your 360 view of today's news from around the globe.